Hello, ladies and gents, and welcome back to What's Up at the Owl's Nest. And who do I have in the Owl's Nest today? Well, it's more of a phone call in the Owl's Nest. And I have Dr. Ben Fissler. He is the Associate Professor of Theater here at HCC. And he is also the coordinator for the Division of Arts and Humanity. And then he has brought along with him a wonderful student. Her name is DeKara.
Well, I'm a student at ACC. I've been it's going to be going on my second year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing general studies for now, but hopefully I can figure out what I want to do. I'm interested in the arts, which in that video, Mind of a Child, I did editing and acting in it. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty fun.
Perfect. The Mind of a Child. And that's what we are here to talk about today. The Mind of a Child was performed by HC Theater Drama Company. And as you all know, the college has been closed due to COVID, but the theater company, they kept on right on moving. That did not stop them, and they performed their play virtually, and it was awesome. So I am excited to have these two here with me. How are you, Dr. Ben Fissler and DeKara?
Well, thank you, Nuzia. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about what we've been doing under the current circumstances. And thank you very much for that promotion and those wonderful compliments. I'm glad you enjoyed the piece.
Yes.
Thank you, too, as well. And I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm excited to be back on the Owl's Nest. This is my first production piece in a while. So I'm excited to have you guys both on the show. So can you tell us what the play is all about? It's called The Mind of a Child. So what's the synopsis?
Well, you can't do the synopsis of The Mind of a Child without giving a quick understanding of what devised theater is.
Okay.
Devised theater, you get a group of people together. You don't have a script ready to go at the beginning like you would with a traditional play. You instead have an idea that you want to explore. And in this case, the idea was, what would happen if grown-up artists, students and professionals of a certain age, developed the ideas of a 7-year-old girl into a play. And that's what we started doing in September, and the end result is a play that has everything you could imagine a 7-year-old child's play would have. There are unicorns, there's a family, there's cartwheeling and acrobatics, and they even have at one point they go to court and resolve their conflicts over whether or not Dimples, their new pet, is a unicorn or a dog.
Mm-hmm. So the idea came from just what do you think a child thinks about, and then did the script evolve from like one person to another? Was it like collaborative, or did one person come up with it? How did it evolve?
I would say it was collaborative. We all put our ideas into it and like how we wanted to go about. And me and Tyler wrote it. So eventually it became like a 2-person thing, but mm-hmm. like it's all of our ideas into it. You know what I mean?
Right. So you just noted you and Tyler Lewis wrote the play. How was it collaborating with him in this artistic environment?
It was pretty good. We had somebody with us before, they dropped out. Her name was Karen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, we tried to have some meetings, before the COVID happened. And we tried to meet up, but then, we decided, me and him talked on Snapchat, and we went about writing it. And we put our ideas into what we think the characters would be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's one of the things when I've done many, many devised theater pieces. And especially the longer term projects, you almost always have at least a slightly different group of people at the end than you had at the beginning. But both Tyler and DeKara were with us from day one. We did have a few people who were able to commit for the fall semester but couldn't commit for the spring semester. And we had a few people who joined us in the spring semester who ended up playing roles and adding some really exciting elements. And I believe the group that we had prior to the pandemic, national lockdown was essentially the same group that ended up being there for the to the very end. So
awesome. That was actually one of my questions. Was it written before quarantine and it just so happened that it had to be virtual, or was it during, like, did you guys miss each other and just wanted to put a play together? So it was pretty cool that you answered that and, you know, started from the beginning.
Yeah, the script did have to change because of quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally, I just think it made it better because some of the things that were added, you've seen the cut. Dakara, you call yourself editor, but you did way more than edit. Like, you, adding the additional song,
right,
and pulling together the different scenes, you really, I would say you are somewhere between an editor and a director, and a filmmaker. It was a really, I was just tickled when I saw the final product. Because I knew it was going to be an interesting experiment, but I didn't think it would look as polished as it did. It was really, really came together in some exciting ways, and that's one of the ways in which it changed. Another way that it changed was just the nature of going to a virtual performance, knowing there would have to be more narration. We would have to make some decisions about how certain scenes were changed that we could have done in person, but we simply could not do virtually.
Right.
And we got to do some things virtually that we really wouldn't have gotten to do in a live performance. So
right,
it wound up being a really wonderful experiment.
That's awesome. We're going to get to it later, but one of my questions was, how'd you do the backgrounds and the music underneath? And that was very cool, the pictures.
Yeah.
So, you know, all that. And like you say, you probably wouldn't have been able to do that with live theater, but because it's virtual, you had cool backgrounds behind some of the actors. And then the way that the pictures were like a slideshow in the beginning and the end. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was like when I did acting one,
mm-hmm.
It's like when you talked about like film and then like stage acting, like stage is like external and like editing, directing, like in films is like internal. So
right,
I feel like this was like more of an internal thing. And like when I went about like editing it, like I really thought it'd be cool to have like that opening shot or something, like how you see in movies, they have like those opening, like cool little things, mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It was really good, and it's a lot of good B-roll. Like, as Dr. Ben Fisler was editing, you had different pictures going underneath with the actors and actresses as he was talking. So it kind of showed the audience what he was explaining. So it was very cool visuals.
Yeah. I always love being a visual person. I think I'm more visual than like having to hear it. Like, I have to see it.
Right.
In order to think of like how it's going to work, and like, I just love being creative with that.
That's good. Well, congratulations on, as Dr. Fisler said, your editing debut and directing and all of that, because it was really good.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah. So The Mind of a Child is a play. And as Dr. Ben Fisler said, it took everything that you could possibly think of a 7-year-old could think of, and it just took it to a world of creativity and imagination. The child in the play is Miranda. So who is Miranda, and how did you get that adorable little girl to commit to this play?
Well, that part was surprisingly easy because that's my daughter.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah, early on in the process, we knew it was going to be called The Mind of a Child, but we weren't necessarily sure what child.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, both my son and my daughter were at the early rehearsals, but I think Miranda really was the one who wanted to make this her play. And that's one of the reasons why she's in the video, and she says, "Thank you for coming to my show."
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of how we got those ideas out of her, a lot of it was we played improvisational games. A lot of it was having her, you know, and some of it was just saying, "Hey, Miranda, what's going to happen in this scene?" And then she would come up with a cool idea, and then we would just run with it.
Nice. I love improv. It makes you, like, think on your toes and think on your feet, and the ideas mm-hmm. are so organic because you really don't have time to sit and think. It's just, like, whatever you feel at that time or whatever you think.
You just have to go with it.
Like you say, you just have to go with it. So you really know that this was really coming out of her mind, and this is truly
right.
The mind of a child. So that's actually very cool.
Yay.
Whose idea was it to perform it virtually? Like, after, was everybody sad because they weren't going to get to do the final play? Or was everybody like, okay, this is what we have to do. We have to do it virtually. Like,
I think it was like some were still thinking of like wanting to do it at the college, but then some were thinking of virtually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was kind of like in the middle. Like, I wasn't sure I was hoping to do it on stage. But then, like, from what's happening, like, it is what it is. If we got to do it virtually, then we got to do that.
Yeah.
But I think it all just came from, like, what everybody thought and, like, coming together on, like, the outcome of what COVID was happening and how it's still happening with the coronavirus.
Yeah, we initially were hopeful that, as everybody, that we were going to be able to come back to campus before the spring semester was over, but once it became very clear that that was not going to happen and that there would not be any events over the summer on campus, said, well, look, we put too much time and energy into this to, you know, give up. And I think we made the decision fairly quickly that in the event that we were not able to be on campus, we were going to do Mind of a Child somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that at some point we just kind of agreed, okay, there's nothing that we're not going to be able to do a live performance. That's a given. So what kind of virtual performance can we do? And that just started moving in that direction very quickly.
Gotcha. So, Dakara, you did all of this editing, and what platform did you use? Were you guys on Zoom or was it a different platform?
Oh, do you mean like for the editing or like the recording of the play?
We could start with recording the play. So,
okay,
when everybody was saying their lines and recording the play, was everybody on Zoom?
Yeah, we were all on Zoom when we recorded the play. We all had like, you know, our own screens when we did it. Mm-hmm. We did like two takes to it. We didn't do just one. We did like two.
You did two takes.
Yeah.
Okay. And then once everybody recited their lines and you did it twice, then how did you start editing and, like, change the backgrounds and add pictures and music and stuff like that?
Well, at first I wasn't aware that we had, like, the recordings on Zoom. So it took me about a week until, like, I got everything together and, like, figured out how to download it all.
Mm-hmm.
And I downloaded it and, like, I went about editing. I had, like, this one editing app. It's called Viva Video. And what I did was I just started from the beginning and I went, like, in chunks with it, and then, like, I was starting to think, well, hey, wouldn't this be neat to have, like, an intro? And so I was thinking of how to go about that, and then I decided to, like, look up some, like, pictures that go with, like, a mind of a child, like,
right,
childlike pictures, and I thought that'd be really cute if it was like that, and I was thinking what song could go with it. And I was thinking of, like, the SpongeBob song, It's the Best Day Ever.
I love that song. That was the very first song, so it set the mood. Like, you knew it was going to be happy and childlike and, like, very vibrant. So I love that you picked that one for the very beginning.
Exactly. I just love SpongeBob, so I think that's another reason, because he's very childlike and full of imagination.
Right. And then you also had, well, you had some great songs. You had the Jeopardy theme song, Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses, Party Rock Anthem. I love that song. That's my song. Grapes,
really?
Mm-hmm, Girls Rule the World, and We Are Family. So how'd you come up with that awesome playlist?
Well, the only song that I came up with was, like, putting the SpongeBob one.
Mm-hmm.
Other stuff was done by Robert.
Okay.
And, like, it was, like, all of our ideas for the songs, like, how to go about, like, which song goes in the spot.
So it was a collaborative effort. That's cool.
Yeah.
A couple of the songs were actually Miranda's ideas, but a couple of them were, I think this is a song that Miranda would like for this particular scene. For example, Miranda doesn't know Welcome to the Jungle,
mm-hmm.
but Robert does. And the connection was just so perfectly in line with how our source material, the mind of our child, thinks.
Right.
And then Me is one of Miranda's favorite songs. Like, she's loved that since it came out.
Mm-hmm.
The one, the Taylor Swift, Brendon Urie duet piece. So that one, of course, we knew from the beginning was going to be
in there.
Yeah.
Cool. So did you have all of your lines memorized, or did you have the script in front of you, since really no one could see outside of the computer boundaries? Really, we couldn't tell if you had a script in front of you or not.
I think it was kind of like both in a way. Like, I had some of my lines memorized, like at the certain parts, but then sometimes I look at the like my computer for like the lines, just have like refresher, because I don't want to mess up on live camera. But if we did, again, I can always edit it out.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's one of the joys of it being virtually, because we, the audience, we only saw what was in the boundaries of your computer screen. So outside of that, you know, we didn't know. Whereas if you were on stage and was doing live performance, you know, if you had your script, we could see it. So that was a pretty cool transition, since it had to go virtual. You know, that was cool.
It actually, I'm going to get a little soapboxy here as a teacher. I'm going to say it reminds me of even live projects where you know your lines well enough to make it look like you know, like they're saying them spontaneously, but you've got a script hidden somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
I did a few church pieces years ago where I could not commit things like the Psalms to memory. So I would have like a script, and I would have a Bible. I would have a Bible in my hand, but then my lines were written into a sheet that was inside the Bible.
Uh-huh.
So that I could open it and refer to it as if I was referring to scripture, as a, you know, like a preacher would. But
Right. Actually,
what I was doing was reminding myself of my cue lines. You can't do that if you don't know your lines at all. But you can do that if you know them well enough that you only need a few, I guess, in early television, the equivalent of cue cards.
Correct.
So that was, it's the difference between, you know, you've seen actors work who really know their lines, but they need a little bit, but they need the occasional cue, versus the actors who clearly they got the script like 5 minutes before the shoot, and you can see their eyes constantly shifting to the side and reading something and then coming back and saying it. So it was important that I, as a director and, you know, professor of theater, remind the cast to get them down as best as you can, as if you were memorizing them for a live performance. And then, yeah, you can have your script in front of you, but you have to get it to that point where it doesn't look like you've got your script in front of you. So it makes me feel good that you are saying you couldn't tell whether people were using, it didn't look like people were using their scripts.
It did
even
not.
Even if they were.
Mm-mm. That's cool.
I'm doing an audio drama for Prince George's Shakespeare Festival, and we're recording this weekend. And I'm basically, you know, I'm memorized, but I'm going to have my script in hand at the microphone because it's an audio drama. No one's ever going to see me, except maybe in promotional materials. And even then, I think there are, you know, better faces for the project anyway. But but I'm not going to be able to deliver them effectively if I'm not essentially memorized, even if I'm using the script as a reminder.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Was it weird sitting in front of a computer instead of blocking and walking the stage and actually interacting with one another? Because, like, I love theater, so I know you feel each other's energy, or the audience, if the audience is laughing, it gives you more energy. You know, when you walk around, it kind of makes the scene more real. And so when you're sitting in front of a computer, did it feel weird or awkward?
I think it felt weird when you have to, like, see your face all the time.
Okay, that makes sense.
Then I got used to it, and I was like, you know, this isn't too bad. This is different. And I haven't done that many, like, theater plays, but I'm, like, trying to get into that more. So it didn't really, that part didn't really bother me as much, more so, like, seeing my face on camera, I think.
And it's the same with me in radio, like, when I hear my voice back. What about the props and the costumes? Who came up with those ideas? They were very vibrant, and some of them were funny, especially in, like, when they went to court and the unicorn and all that type of stuff. Who came up with the costumes and props, and how did each actor get them since you guys were apart?
Okay, so I'll speak to that. The interesting thing about dealing with the props and costumes is that as soon as it became clear we were not going to be able to have a live performance, we immediately started scrambling to see who had what. And some of them were really easy, obviously. Everybody's got a big pot in their kitchen, so all I had to do to get Robert's pot for the peanut ravioli dinner was just get the biggest pot you have from your kitchen and just like pull that out and be, you know, and you can have a spoon in there or not if you want. But the joke is that I got this giant pot of peanut ravioli and we're all like, oh no, I don't even want to know what that tastes like. But the unicorn was pretty cool because we knew as soon as Dulce joined the group, she said, I have a big unicorn doll.
Oh, wow.
And I don't think she had brought it to rehearsal, or maybe she brought it once. But either way, I remember being surprised by how large of a stuffed animal that was.
Yes.
Like, it's the kind of thing like a four-year-old kid could ride like a horse. Like,
yes.
A big thing. And I was just like, that's fantastic. And so then it just became a question of sort of directing her on how to, you know, have it be visible in some parts and invisible in other parts. And that stuff like that was easy. And it was actually kind of, the second part of the equation was getting things into their hands that they didn't already have, which was mostly the tutus, the tiaras.
Yeah.
And we thought maybe ties too, but it ended up nobody really needing a tie. Everybody had a tie of some kind. But that was just fun because we got to drive around the county and do socially distanced pickups and deliveries, so everybody got their hands on a tutu.
Nice. That was cool.
Yeah. That was actually a fun time. And it's led to some good things because since then I've been working on other projects that are coming up or are just in the early planning phases. And there's been a lot of like, well, how are we going to take care of that? And I've been like, I've got an idea.
Mm-hmm.
How about I meet this person at this place with this item, drop it off. And it really has, because I kind of feel like an artistic spy.
Yeah.
Like, place the tutu on the ground. Step 6 feet back. I will pick up the tutu.
That's hilarious.
And meet you on Zoom in 3 hours. All right, so that's all I had to say about that.
Nice. And I loved how colorful everything was, like the tutus and the tiaras. It made it even more real to see the mind of a child. And I love that you guys kept the feel of what you wanted the play to be. And you guys did not let the fact that it was virtual mess up, you know, the plans, the ideas, the creative concepts. You guys still went with it as far as you could go, as far as, you know, the parameters would let you. You guys were still full on creative, and I love it. And so is there anything else that you want to let the listeners know that I haven't touched on?
In general, I don't think so, but I do want to add to that last part. I just want to send a shout out to one of our core members, and that was Jamie Schoonover, who goes by Crimson.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls herself Crimson because she's the queen of the Unseelie Court at the Maryland Fairy Festival.
Oh, wow.
And a graduate of Hartford Community College and a costume designer by trade, who did a number of shows for us and a number of shows at Towson. And this has been her most recent project. So she, you know, she really was, you know, instrumental in kind of being there to make sure that we had the right costume options, and it was just really beneficial to have her support in that regard.
Awesome. Shout out to her. Shout out to all of the actors and actresses that were on Zoom. I want everybody who's listening to go check it out. They really poured their heart on their virtual stage. It was pretty cool. And shout out to Miranda. She was flipping and doing a whole bunch of stuff, upside down, swinging on a little monkey bar. She was doing everything.
Yep, she's a little gymnast.
It was so
cute. And I think we mentioned everybody at some point, but obviously the entire cast and the people who helped us at the beginning but couldn't be there for the tail end of the project are mentioned in the
The credits.
The credits at the end.
But I think we haven't mentioned Hayden, who joined us, and he's one of our theater majors and a really just talented actor. He was the one who played the professor at Cartwheel University, as well as magistrate of the court.
Foster.
And Foster Apple, yeah, he joined us in the spring semester, and another one of our very talented theater majors who was able to join us. And by the way, I say one of our talented theater majors because all our theater majors are talented.
That's
let's
right.
be honest here. So I don't want it to be taken as one of the talented theater majors. All our theater artists, all our majors, all our non-majors who are participating, there's incredible talent across the board at Harford Community College. So we're really fortunate to have good people. But we haven't forgotten anybody, right? We mentioned everybody else. So, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that when we do say that, you know, everybody who was in, because this really was a group project from beginning to end, and it's to the credit of every single person involved.
Yes.
And not just the faces you see on the camera if you get to watch our little 28 minutes and change virtual performance.
That's right. Just like on the stage, you know, you have stagehands, you have producers, directors, all of that. So
it's going to like tell a story.
Yep.
That's right. Well, thank you both of you for coming on What's Up at the Owl's Nest. Again, we talked about The Mind of a Child, performed by the theater company here at HCC. Please go to it's on Harford Community College. It's on their YouTube page. Is there anywhere else that is seen, or is it on the college YouTube?
I think it has to be posted on the college
YouTube
page. Yeah. But you can, you can share it far and wide.
Yes, share.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm so glad to
produce
this.
Thank you for having us.
You're so welcome.